every good idea I've had has happened with a buzz on. And so what does that mean? It means, it probably means that I'm not thinking about the rest of the things that, you know, are chirping at you all the time, you know, whether it's your all day, your phone, your email, your taxes, you know, just pick it. Like, there's a zillion inputs that I think stifle free thinking.
All right, welcome to this episode of A Little Higher. We have a wonderful guest with us today, Richard Betts, that I'm very excited to open up a conversation with him. So Richard Betts is someone that I used to work with, and in working closely with Richard almost 10 years ago now, Richard, it's really helped shape me into the entrepreneur and leader that I am today. And still to this day, following the work that he does, it's always a constant reminder to do things that you love with the full throttle. So Richard Betts is previously a master sommelier, and I had worked with you, Richard, I want to say 11 years ago now, on some of your agave projects, mm-hmm. Sombra Mezcal and Astral Tequila, as well as some of your wines. And you were one of the master somms that aced the test on your first try.
True.
There's only how many people in the world have ever done that?
I was the ninth.
Ninth.
And there may be 12 or 13 now, but I don't pay so much attention.
Okay, cool. Yeah. It's a tall feat to accomplish.
Yeah.
And now you are no longer with the Court of Master Sommeliers and working on some really exciting projects that we'll dive into in a little bit. So Richard, tell us about where you are now and what you're working on, and then we'll kind of dive in from there.
Yeah. So I live in Amsterdam. My wife and I have been here for 7 years, or going on 7 years. And it's been wonderful. It's been wonderful to get out of the U.S., see things from a different perspective, and enjoy a different way of life. For example, I have two bikes, but I don't own a car. So we take the train lots of places. It's awesome. And for me, with my work, as long as I'm willing to travel and maybe be flexible with my actual work hours when I connect with my team, I can live anywhere in the world. You know, with that in mind, Amsterdam's been great to us. We need more nature in our lives. It's a really cool town, but nature in the Netherlands is far and in between. So we're moving to Mallorca, which we're really excited about. Yeah. But starting December, we're going to move to Asia first for 6 months for really predominantly our tequila business. We found, you know, in short, there's a thirst for tequila around the world. It's not just a Mexican and American phenomena. So we're going to share our tequila with really all of Asia. So it's exciting.
That's so cool. I love how you approach life without any boundaries on where you can take yourself, life, love, business. Mm-hmm. I know we enjoyed visiting you in Amsterdam. So I'm like, keep coming to the new spot so we have a reason to come visit.
Exactly. Exactly.
So your work with tequila goes back, with agave spirits, let's broaden it. Mm-hmm. It goes back quite some time.
Yeah.
You've been working in agave and you've had some really successful projects. So tell me about how you got started with agave and what brought you to Comos now.
Yeah. So for me, you know, I grew up in the desert Southwest. Our house was in Tucson, Arizona. This is in the 1970s, you know, when I was growing up, and 80s. And we would spend every weekend, like almost literally for 18 years, on a little beach called Puerto Peñasco, which is in the northern part of the Gulf of California. And so, you know, Mexico figured really prominently in my life and you know, has my entire life has. And so there, you know, you develop an affinity for the people, for the culture. Of course, the culture is very much about, no matter where you are on the planet, it's about what you eat, what you drink, how you celebrate. And that really resonated with me. So, you know, from probably earlier age than most appropriate, you know, there was always Bacanora around, which is basically mezcal from Sonora. Or there was even just Cuervo Gold, which, you know, is what it is, but it was around.
And it was drinkable.
At that point in time. Yeah, not today, but at that point in time. Everything's drinkable, but
yes.
You know, so I had an early love for it. And then, you know, had changed careers, decided I didn't want to do what I'd studied for, got into food, got into wine, had been making wine, and really was enjoying that pursuit. And I still do today, actually. But agave spirits, I found, were, I was also serving wine as a sommelier at night. And so you're part of the nightlife, and I like to be up, and I like energy, high energy. and found that agave spirits are the only thing on the bar that are actually uppers. You feel that they have a physiologically diverse response to everything else, you know, be it wine, right, gin, vodka, whiskey, bourbon, scotch. They're all downers. You know, you drink them and it's kind of fun, but, you know, eventually you're going to sleep. And that's true. Yeah. That's true with everything. But agave spirits, you're going to go dancing first. And I like that.
Yes.
Yeah. So I really, you know, I don't want to be self-deprecating here, but I will say I thought somewhat foolishly that, oh, I figured out how to make wine. Well, I can figure out how to make spirits. And for me, that's always been, I see this as a gift. So maybe, and you could say, well, that's foolhardy. But you don't get to say that because it actually worked, right? But, you know, from the outside, say like, well, why, you know, why? It's like, well, I'm just gonna go figure it out. You know, you don't have to go to school to do a thing. You can figure out what the thing is you love and then reverse engineer it and figure out how to do that, as opposed to like, well, you know, with wine, for example, it's sugar and yeast. The yeast eats the sugar, makes carbon dioxide and alcohol. Like, you can go to school and learn that, or you can figure out, well, I love this particular thing, and then unknit the sweater and figure out like, well, how did that thing I love come to be? And then you're just learning the problem from the opposite direction, which I think is, at least in, you know, the way I learn, the way I think about things and the way I want to get to a result, that makes far more sense for me personally.
Very cool.
Yeah. You know, at the time, this is in 2005, and it's like, oh, I want to make mezcal. And you go back almost 20 years and no one really knew what mezcal was north of the border. People thought it was mescaline. They thought it was a drug. My friends told me I was going to go to jail. It's like, no, it's not mescaline. It's mezcal. It's something totally different.
I think it was only that one bottle with a scorpion or something in it.
Yeah, there was the Scorpion and Del Maguey. And that was really it. Ilegal was just beginning as well. But those are, you know, along with Sombra, the progenitors of what is now mezcal and around the world, which is exciting.
Yes.
Of course, there were, you know, thousands of them in Mexico, but they just weren't part of the you know, common parlance in the U.S. So I thought, okay, mezcal is really smart and there are different types of agave, which I related to varietals, just like in winemaking. And there's different, you know, terroir, you know, meaning places where that will influence how the spirit ends up, meaning, you know, the slope it grows on, the elevation it grows at, the sunshine it receives, the soil, the rain, all these things, the nerdy stuff, right? And yeah, so that
the
that
fun
really,
stuff once you get into it.
Totally. And so that's what drew me to it. And then really just through working with distillers, figured out how to do it. And then you figure out, okay, now I understand how to do what you do, but then how do I remember my ideals up here? This is the sweater. How do I get to what I want it to be? So then you learn to how you can isolate variables, do testing, and then figure out what changes are actually going to influence things so you get to a final result. And I'm a big believer in that. You know, I went to graduate school for a hard science, did a thesis, and essentially it's a long word, but it's within the College of Geology. But, you know, there, when you learn that scientific process, it's about, you know, amongst the most romantic people I know, being myself, I say that as a preface to, I'm a big believer in data and not dogma. You know what I mean? So you can believe in something, but don't you want to know if it's true? You know what I mean? And there's so much dogma in really every industry. And there's like, well, it's like this, but once you really learn, you're like, but is it? And actually it's not. And so now you've got someone standing here waving this flag for something that's actually untrue. I'm like, what a waste of life. Like, you know, figure it out. And actually that you're going to get better if you can actually do the work to figure out how to get there. And for me, that's key. So, I mean, I've made this story much longer than I think you're looking for, but
it's okay.
essentially figured out what it was I wanted to do to make the mezcal that I wanted to drink. And I think that that's fundamental with any journey, be it entrepreneurial or just in life, is, you know, do what you're going to enjoy, right? Because if no one else is going to enjoy it, you better be able to enjoy it, you know, because you got to live with it.
Yes. I think you and I would talk about when we work together on Sombra, you and I would talk about that all the time. Well, Devin, at the end of the day, it's good. It's what I want. So I'll drink it all. Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
We're making it to our standards, to your standards, so that we can enjoy it.
Yeah.
And I think if you hold that beat in everything you do, you can always be proud of what you make.
Totally.
Which you were. And I mean, you really were you took me down to Mexico a few times and I was shocked. I mean, you were really working with the people on the land with their form of making mezcal, and then kind of overlaying your little tweaks on the process to get to the end result of Sombra. Yep. One time you took me down there when I was a vegan, which I'm no longer a vegan, and they were making food. And I was like, Richard, I can't eat that. No, you're eating it. We're down here.
or don't, but you're going to be hungry.
At these people's home, you're eating it. Yeah. And it was like a goat head that they were cooking in the ground.
Yeah.
And I think that was so cool. I did eat it. But like you were saying, the culture, like how do you gather around a table and drink and eat? And then how do you bring that magic of that moment down in Mexico into a bottle, into what you brought to the world with Sombra?
Yeah. Yeah. It's exciting. It's really exciting. I mean, this is how you relate to your fellow humans, right? Oftentimes around the table. That was such an interesting journey for me because, you know, you do go learn from someone and then you do isolate the variables. And then you do come up with a list of things you want to tweak and you do say things get better, but then you have the list isn't done. And I found that, you know, with this distiller, we could change these things, but there's a glass ceiling. So then you're like, okay,
right.
We can only go here. And they'd say, yes, we can only go here. So then you go work with someone else and make some changes and get better. But then there'd be another glass ceiling and so on and so forth until it got to a place where we thought, well, we just have to build our own place. And so that's what we ended up doing is building our own distillery. I'm really proud of that work. I think it's some of the most important work I've been a part of because we've figured out how to solve so many different things from the point of view of how do you make great mezcal, but also how do you be a good steward of the environment? And in the end, we, very long story made short, but all spirits industry has a great deal of waste. Like if you're right. holding this, right, let's say this is a bottle of vodka or gin or whiskey, it's distilled. Right. And the act of distillation is to say, take a large volume and just take the alcohol out of it. So you're distilling this and then you have this volume. So for every one of these, doesn't matter what the spirit is, they're 10 times this of liquid waste.
In waste.
Yeah, wow. Which is crazy. And then there's the solid waste. And, you know, if you're a subsistence farmer or distiller in the middle of nowhere, there's no program to deal with any of that. So it just ends up getting put back in the environment, which has horrible, you know, degradation effects on the environment. And so when we built that distillery, it was about solving that. And for us, that meant turning that waste into bricks, adobe bricks. It's basically, you know, dirt, agave fiber, and historically it'd be dirt, hay, and water. We use dirt, agave fiber, and the liquid waste and have built dozens and dozens of structures for free from these things, from the waste. It's so cool, right? And so then that feels good, right? You have to do good while you're trying to do well,
right?
Which is an old saying, but it's, I live by it. It's really important. So eventually
I think it's so important.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. That distillery was, they created an award for it in Mexico. It was one of the most ecologically thoughtful distillery in Mexico, which is pretty cool.
It's so cool. And it was because of your foresight and you took things a little higher. So you could have just stopped at a wonderful mezcal, but you didn't. You looked at it through a different lens and thought, well, yes, we have this wonderful mezcal, but how do we, you know, handle that other part that no one really knows about and turn it into part of the story? It's so inspiring to see you do that kind of with everything that you do. You're thinking about something very wholesome rather than just taking one part out of it and exploiting it.
Totally. Totally. I feel just so fortunate, you know, and just through my whole life, you know, be it what it may, like, you know, we didn't grow up with monetary resources, but we had lots of love in our family. And you have to acknowledge that, you know, being born in the United States at that time as a white male had plenty of privilege, right? Just in and of itself. And so, you know, as you travel the world and sit around tables and have empathy and understanding for how other people live, I think, you know, it becomes really apparent really quickly that you have to give back.
Yeah. So cool. Thank you for doing that work.
It's a huge pleasure. It's a huge pleasure.
Showing people the way. You're setting kind of precedent. There's, you know, people watching what you do. So they're, there's a way to do it. There's someone that is an example. So thank you for that.
You're
and you're still in agave.
Yeah.
You're still doing agave things.
Yeah. So we sold those projects, Sombra and Astral. Those are both owned by Diageo now, which is a big spirit company. And we're onto something that is much grander in all senses. So my partner, Joe Marchese, and I, in 2018, shook on my rooftop. It was like May of 18. To a whole new idea of tequila, which we can talk about or not. It's called Comos, K-O-M-O-S.
Yeah, please tell us about it.
I'm super, super proud of what's happening there. For us, it's about, again, making the tequila we want to drink. And I actually do prefer to drink tequila over mezcal. It's just, I think it can make something prettier, more refined, more delicate, more complex, actually. And our price point is, it starts at over $100, which means they're aged spirits, which means, you know, the tinkerer and the winemaker and me gets to do lots of different things because you have the room to do it, right? Financially. And so we've created this thing called Comos that we think more closely aligns the way people consume tequila with actual production and messaging, right? And so everyone in tequila beats the drum of tradition, 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 tradition. And that was the same thing I saw in mezcal. And if I had done that, well, we never would have built that distillery. We never would have helped solve the environmental problem if we just kept doing the same thing. And I didn't invent tequila. You know, I didn't grow up there, but I think I do know how to make things, at least those that I like. And I think I do know how to make a contribution to a community and to a category of tequila. And so when we look at how high-end tequila is consumed, there's no mariachi band often. You know, there's almost never chips and salsa and guacamole. And I love those things, but that's not what this section of tequila is about. You know, it's about a fine restaurant, a fine bar, or your home, or a day club, or a nightclub, or a beach, or if you're really lucky, you're on a boat somewhere. And there, again, that's a very different set of circumstances. And so we thought, why not, you know, if we group all that as like good living or Mediterranean living, Mediterranean lifestyle, that fits actually perfect with some of the winemaking ideas. And if I can bring the winemaking ideas of being gentle and thorough and a deft, delicate touch to the tequila making and message that, then it'll make sense to people, both visually and when they drink it, which is the whole point. And so it's going really, really well. At this point, we're just over 2.5 years in. It's the fastest growing ultra luxury spirit on the planet, which is really,
woo!
It's amazing. I went from
that's fucking awesome.
You know, the largest number of employees I ever had was you and Ricky, which two, we'd made three, right? Now we're at 75.
Holy shit, Richard.
It's insane. It's
a lot. Do you enjoy that part of it?
I'm learning to.
Cool. That's cool. Good answer.
Yeah, totally.
That's really cool.
Yeah, it's really cool. And so we're making a lot of tequila, but with that, so we've brought that brick making program to tequila. And it's really, it's an open source thing. It's not to say like, oh, we figured it out. We're the cool people.
Right.
No, it's like we figured it out because we care about this place. And so here's the recipe. Everybody else, please take that recipe and do it. And other people are doing it, which is really exciting. Yeah. Yeah.
That's really exciting. To not gatekeep something that has the potential to
fix the
world. So much.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So when the back of the, and this is truly back to the napkin math, this dogma right. So far, but if you look at the volume of tequila produced and think about the amount of agave that is needed to produce it and the amount of associated waste, if we took all of that annually from the tequila industry, you could build a house for most of the people in Mexico, which is to say the scale of it is huge. And so we actually just 2 weeks ago launched the website for the Comos. It's called the Comos Foundation, which details all this work. And so we've got it all. You know, everywhere you do this work, the chemistry is slightly different. So you have to get the right dirt and the right this and the right that. So we have that all figured out. We're making thousands of bricks now. And the first two projects, we're building a home for a woman in Amatitan, which is one of the towns of tequila. And we're building a school in Amatitan, which we're really excited about. Yeah, it's really, really
very cool.
Yeah. So
just what fulfilling work. Like, obviously, we like the tequila, but like that work, so cool. Mm-hmm. What a driving force. Totally. I have been seeing Comos around more and more and more in Nashville, and I always like to go up to, I know the guy.
I love that.
You know, this is what this is.
Two of our team members live there, actually.
Oh, really? Yeah, we'll have to connect with them.
Yeah, they're great.
Yeah, I would love that.
Yeah.
It's like at Soho House. I see it at all the little oyster bars that Pablo and I like to go to during happy hour.
Awesome.
So yeah, it's lovely. It's beautiful. It tastes wonderful.
Thank you.
And it's so cool watching you and Carla and your team have fun.
And we are having
fun. On social media with it.
It's definitely fun.
So, you know, you were talking about the waste in the agave spirit making, which is profound if you ever get to go down to tequila and see it. I mean, it's mounds and mounds of waste. And it reminds me, it's similar waste. I'm sure every industry you look into, there's the waste, but similar waste in the cannabis industry when you're going through the extraction process and pulling out distillate or terpenes or anything that you want from the plant. Sometimes you're using harsh chemicals in that waste isn't something that you can just like bury and put back into the ground. So the cannabis or hemp industry is constantly trying to evolve where some of that waste can go, whether it be in textiles like pressed brick or pressed wood boards. There's a really cool company up in Kentucky right now that's figuring out how to take the spent waste and turn it into pellets and then burn it to create energy. And then it's like fueling a very large Bitcoin mining center. But there's such an overage of energy that they're giving it back to the state at such a surplus that it's like, this needs to be studied, how they've figured it out. It reminds me of how you've figured out how to do bricks, how the hemp or cannabis industry can figure out what to do with their waste and have like a whole subsidiary industry under it.
Totally. But
very cool think outside the box with
Absolutely. One of our distillery partners and his high school best friend, they have figured out two other uses. So the agave fiber they also make agave syrup. It's treated a little bit differently. So like if you buy it at Walmart or Costco, it probably comes from them. So the fiber's ground up too fine to use for bricks, but they compress it into pellets and then burn it. And that actually powers the distillery. And then some of it goes to their friend who's just now, I think, be the first in the U.S. to use them, make pallets. So when the forklifts pick up, so there'll be agave fiber pallets that are also made.
Oh, so cool. Like a circular cycle.
Yeah, exactly. So just
very cool.
There are lots of things to do with it if we just think about it.
Yeah. And I think that kind of ties into something else I'd love to talk to you about is just kind of your patience in figuring out the process. Patience is something I'm just constantly like hitting a wall and like, oh, this is another lesson for how to be patient.
Me too.
You and I share a birthday, so I feel like we have that Aquarius energy that just wants to figure it out and wants to be the best right out the gate.
Yep.
And there's just constant lessons, but it's something I've gotten to learn from you about is like, just keep going until you have the aha moment. And it's okay maybe to put it down for a little bit and rest on the idea. And then when energies align, bring it back up. And I think, outside of wine and agave, you have all these other fun projects, one of them being hot sauce.
Yeah.
And I remember you tinkering with hot sauce 15 years ago.
Yeah.
I made a mock-up. It had like a mermaid on it. I think it was Carla as a mermaid.
Was it that mermaid right there?
It was that mermaid. Yes. It was
That's
that
amazing.
One. I drew that Stay Frisky too I took your Stay Frisky tattoo and did it on the sticker. Anyway, so you had been trying to make a hot sauce back then. And now here you are now, again, working on the hot sauce. And I think that's important too, is like, it's okay to just wait and take your time until it's just right.
Yeah, totally. I agree with that. Absolutely. And in this case, it was something we loved and had developed a recipe that it's extremely simple. I think it's a lot best described like Italian cooking, where you just take, three ingredients and don't screw them up. And at that time in our lives, we had one idea of how this was going to be used and basically in a travel kit and what have you. And then for one reason or another, we just didn't just put it down, really, really easily just put it down. We also moved to Europe, but it didn't diminish our love. It's like you have this little collection of things you love. And then Carl and I, one summer we're driving around Europe and another friend said, oh, you have to go eat at this restaurant. We're in a little town called Lisch, which is L-E-C-H, Austria. And I prefer the mountains in the summer. It was summertime. And so we went to this place and it's like a 600-year-old sheep barn in a meadow and helmed by Ethel and Jakob. Ethel originally from Singapore and Jakob originally from Milan in northern Italy. And both very accomplished chefs and hospitalians, if you will. Jakob also does a lot in the front of the house, meaning, guest facing. We had an amazing dinner. And after dinner, we walked upstairs and they showed us the attic where they have all these things that they've been gathering all summer and preserving and pickling and, provisions for winter, essentially, and just beautifully lit on this rough-hewn board. And it was at that moment, the four of us just knew we should make something together, kindred spirits.
Cool.
Really shared enthusiasms, shared knowledge and complementary knowledge. They know things we don't know and she knows things he doesn't know. And same with Carl and I, she knows things I don't know. And together, the four of us, I think, are very additive. And it gets really important when thinking about partnership. You have to have complementary skill sets. And so it made all the sense in the world to pick it up. We went on first really cool search to find. We'd found this one pepper, and it was the one that we'd been using when we were working with you way back when. But we went and found the guy. So it was this wild search in southern Italy, and found this guy that grows a specific pepper that we think is just magical. That's the principal pepper that we use. But they're dried peppers, and they're fresh peppers that we ferment. And then they get blended together, and that's it. Like, you know, so it's salt, vinegar, and peppers. Some are dried, some are fermented, and it comes together to make this amazing elixir that we're calling Stuzzi, actually.
Stuzzi.
Yeah, S-T-U-Z-Z-I, which is short for...
Love.
Yeah. It's short from stuzzicare, and stuzzicare means to tease, or it's a pick-me-up in Italian.
Okay.
So we just took the Stuzzi part. Yeah.
And when will we be able to try some of that?
I guess February of next year.
Okay.
So not so far off.
Cool.
Yeah.
So amazing.
Yeah.
Okay. Tell me about, you're a creative at heart, right? How do you keep the creative juices flowing? So how do you tap in outside of agave spirits to, you know, your vision or your dreams, and then help you execute on them without giving us the secrets, right?
Oh no, the secret is just make sure you're in your best space. You know, I really mean that. And I think that, you know, whatever we're working on, if we want to do it well, we have to figure out how do we get into our best space. For example, when I took the master's only exam, a lot of people complained about having a bad day. You know, you studied all year for this 3-day exam and you have a bad day and you don't pass. Like, well, how do you take the bad day part out of the equation? Right. And you do that by figuring out how are you your best self? Right. And at that time, for that purpose of taking that exam, I knew that I could be my best test taking self if I wanted studied and was prepared, but also went for a run, listened to loud music and pounded a beer. Right. And that would put me in a space. And so similarly, yesterday, Carl and I were sitting here joking about, like, and I've said this before, it's like every good idea I've had has happened with a buzz on. And so what does that mean? It probably means that I'm not thinking about the rest of the things that, you know, are chirping at you all the time, you know, whether it's your phone, your email, your taxes, you know, just pick it. Like, there's a zillion inputs that I think stifle free thinking, right? And I heard this the other day, someone termed it, It's not a gift. It's something that can be cultivated, but it's about learning to play, right? And turns out, you know, alcohol, cannabis, psilocybin, LSD, whatever it may be, they're all great doors to open to play, right?
Right.
And so,
especially as an adult, that you just can kind of tap into that inner child a little.
100%. So when I think about that, you know, how do I stay creative or get into a good space? One is making time, right? Literally just taking time to do it. One is being in nature. That's super, super important to me. I don't know if I finished that sentence earlier. We're leaving Amsterdam because we need more nature, but we're going to finally stop next spring in Mallorca. That's, we'll find the nature.
So cool.
Yeah.
And because you're like a lizard. You need the hot nature, right?
Yeah. I need sun. I need lots of sun.
I need sun.
And then of course, you know, any of the aforementioned, you know, recreational substances, I think those can be super helpful. So if you were looking in our refrigerator, you would find 3 different types of psilocybin for that.
Wow.
For that. There's a really cool LSD microdosing service here. They come deliver to your house. It's
wow. It benefits of not living in the US.
Yeah. I mean, in the Netherlands, everything's tolerated, right? So it's really, yeah. Some things are legal and everything's tolerated. It's really an amazing thing.
Pretty cool.
So, you know, those are great ways to sometimes even just like calm. You know, we've done a microdose cycle with LSD and it you know, looks like a lipstick, spray it in. It's amazing.
Right.
And no, it's not a big visual trip. That's not the point. The point is that, you know, the world's a little more sparkly and you're a little more calm. And so all that chirping goes away. And so maybe that is a moment when you can think about things a little bit differently or think about things the way you would if didn't have all these encumbrances. You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, you know, within that, I think it's to what occasion is each thing best suited, right? So you have all the things I think, you know, in this house, we love psilocybin the most. But that's not for me, like a sit in the house sort of thing. It's definitely not go be around a bunch of people sort of thing.
No. You know,
be
I've made that mistake before.
Oh yeah, totally. Totally. You know, the plants talk to me in those moments and I want to be around right. them. Yeah. You know, so yeah. It's, I think it's important to not, you know, paint with a really broad brush, but instead be like anything, just really deliberate about how you approach things.
Yeah. Intentionality of when you consume and what setting you put yourself in for a desired outcome.
Yeah. Set yourself up for success.
Yeah. I like psilocybin. I think that's our favorite one to tap into that play mode.
Yeah. Yeah. Us too.
And yeah. Sure. Nature. Bonfires. Mm-hmm. Love.
Totally. And yeah. Even if it's not, I guess it'd be, I want to follow on and to be really clear. It's not like in that moment, like, oh, there's a eureka moment and you have, oh, this is a great sure. idea. Quick, write it down. No, that's not how it yeah. works. Your heart just opens. And I think mm-hmm. that there's this kind of lasting moment and of you really being who you are and fundamentally, which is, I believe, a good human filled with love and compassion and empathy. And out of that, I think flows good ideas. Even if the good idea
is afterglow.
Yeah. Even if a good idea is just to do what you love, right? You know,
right.
And to be brave enough to do that. I think that's how that really works.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. I think something else I've also admire about Carla and yourself is the physical element. Y'all keep both your brain and your bodies fit for fun, I guess yeah. would be a good tagline for y'all. And that's always been inspiring too. I remember I'd be traveling with you and I would be hungover, not able to get up. And you'd be like, oh, I just ran 10 miles. And I'm like, what the fuck?
You just do it. You just do it.
That's how you keep going.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, if we're willing to look around and learn from other people's examples, there's plenty of examples of people who sadly have done it wrong too. Right. And so don't, you know, we say make any mistake, just don't make it twice, but you can apply that more broadly. Like just look at the mistakes that people have made and, you know, give them your heart and wish them well, but don't do the same fucking thing, you know? And I struggle with that. Like, you know, I live in that, you know? So it takes deliberate work to hope for longevity and that you get to live to see the next one because it's fun. And you gotta be really thoughtful about that. You know, I'm 52 now. And just got
congratulations.
Thank you. Not even halfway there. I'm going to 113. Equality yeah. 113. Totally.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah. I was just told I have high cholesterol, right? And so.
Oh.
Yeah. And it's like, well,
which isn't always a bad thing.
No, you know, but you know, lots of you look around. It has been for a lot of people. Like, you don't have a heart attack right. or have a stent put in, or and I mean, no. if you do, fine, do it. But. You know, they're also like, well, you can take this pill and it makes your muscles hurt. It's like, fuck that. Like, what's the other
yeah.
option? Like, fix your diet and it might work. It might not work. And so I've just spent the last 90 days really doing the hard work of fixing the diet. And at first you're like, oh, right. fuck, you know, I sure like to eat ice cream, but I'm not going to do that anymore. That's fine. Get over it. It's yeah. fucking ice cream, whatever.
Yeah.
I just got the results back yesterday and I fucking lowered it by 25% by changing my diet.
There you go.
How cool is that, right? You know,
and you feel great and you didn't have to take that pill.
No, you don't. But that's also, that's a mindset towards the longevity, right?
Right.
And then being able to, yeah. So I'm going to make the party next summer or even tomorrow night or whatever. You know what I mean? Yeah.
And I might have ice cream on that night.
In fact, I had some last night.
Deserve it on that night.
Yeah. Last night I did.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah.
Love it.
But yeah. But no, you got to take care of this thing that houses your soul.
Yeah. Yes. You're a wonderful example of that. Okay. So that was all such inspiring conversation. If you could look back and maybe not even look back, look at yourself in the mirror today and give yourself one piece of advice, what would it be?
That's a great question. You know, I do look back and I wouldn't change anything because then I wouldn't be sitting here. You know, I am so happy living the life I live with the person I love, my other half. And so I wouldn't change anything. But I wonder, you know, I always feel, and I don't mean this in a harsh way to myself, but sometimes I've been like late to the dance. You know, maybe I know so many young people that are very self-reflective. And I was like, God, I feel like I figured that out last week. Like, how are you already so self-reflective? You know, And I don't want to say I wish, I don't believe in regret. Although I do wonder, like, how was I not more self-reflective? You know, and I would also say that I'm really lucky to have figured out that I should just do what I love doing. But it wasn't like, you know, I woke up and was like, I'm just gonna do what I love doing, everything's gonna be fine. It was running from a place and like, I hate this place and I hate this situation and I hate this work and all I know how to do is this. And it's just like, you know, running on fire, blindfolded, naked in the woods, you know, which is painful, you know, it was just really intense,
exhausting.
And then with that commitment to light yourself on fire and run blindfold naked through the woods somehow gathers, you know, momentum and attention, and it just worked out. You know, there's a lot of pain that comes with that along the way. And again, you know, being self-reflection, I think it all comes back to that, you know, self-reflection.
And what does self-reflection look like for you? So how in practice?
Thinking about why I do anything, you know, what are the goals? I think I'm a very optimistic person in general. I've never been less optimistic about the planet than I am right now. And I don't want that to then make me depressed, right? And I don't want to just have blind false optimism either. But so how do you reflect on how you got to love yourself before you can love others? So how can I find little nuggets to be thoughtful about? Okay, well, maybe building a house and, you know, for someone without one in Mexico, that's a source of optimism. And continue to smile about that. And I think that becomes infectious, right? And so what is it I want to accomplish? What do I want the world to look like? And what's my part, right? I also love to travel. Well, that means you got to make money to travel, you know, and just give out plane tickets.
I wish they would too.
Yeah, with beds and all the kind of stuff. I also love fancy wine. How about that? This is a better example.
Okay.
You know, do I want to work for fancy wine? No, that's not a reason to work, you know,
right.
And in the end, like, why is it fancy? Because, you know, two people want it and one person willing to spend more money for it. And, you know, it's just all stupid. Like, that's not
right.
Those sorts of pursuits, if I'm self-reflective, I look at it like, so why am I doing this thing? Right.
Right.
You know, why am I making tequila? Well, I enjoy it. I enjoy being creative about it. I have an opportunity to give back, which then increases my optimism. Over here, if I get to drink fancy wine from it, that's just a fringe benefit, but don't work for that. That's not something, you know. So if, like, for example, there are plenty of good ideas commercially. You're like, wow, you could do that and make a lot of money. But if you're being self-reflective, it's like, well, you're going to have fun doing it. Why do you want to make a lot of money in the first place? Like, you have your health, and if you have your optimism and you have things you love around them, maybe they're pets or people or, you know, what have you, it's probably enough, you know? Like, so self-reflection doesn't mean like have a short list. It means figure out like what matters to you and why, right?
Right. Be in alignment with the why.
Yeah. Like, if you were to die tomorrow, would you have done the things or lived the way you want to live, right?
Right. Kind of slough off the
bullshit.
The stuff that's not feeding that.
Yeah, exactly.
Very cool. Thank you, Richard.
You're welcome.
For sharing your story on everything.
It's a pleasure.
Always
an honor.
So inspiring. All right. Thank you, Richard Betts, for taking the conversation of how you make things, being patient, how you use plants to tap into that playful mode and all things love, life, and happiness with no boundaries.
Absolutely.
It's been an honor having you on the show, and I hope to have you and Carla next time and keep having these types of conversations.
Yeah, that'd be wonderful. I really appreciate it. Thank you for having me, and thanks for having a good conversation.
Thank you.